One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
You done fell right down that rabbit hole, so reality is questionable. Try, but you just can't let it go. These two right here put on the show. It's paranormal overload with Southern hospitality. Haunted murder, mayhem, tip while discussing immortality. Locations with a dark past, history that comes to life. Hillbillies with a knack for everything that goes bump at night. Overthinking if you're by yourself, these two will have you turning on the lights. Mixing in a little comedy to make sure it all fits in just right. Hey.
Welcome to Hillbilly Horror Stories. Now here's your hosts, Jerry and Tracy Punk, Heather Dog Ninja.
Sometimes their cat, Freddy, but never the ferrets.
Hey guys, welcome to episode 390 of Hillbilly Horror Stories. I'm Jerry.
And I'm Tracy.
Tracy, as usual, we want to thank all of our military and civil servants all over the world, no matter which country you represent, you know, as long as you're one of the good guys. We just want to say thank you for what you do for us every single day to the men, women, and service animals out there.
Continue prayers for you guys. Thank you for keeping us safe. Always, always, always praying for you all. Thank you for all you guys do for us.
Tracy, it's been another one of those weeks where we've talked to a lot of people that are struggling, going through some things. We want to make sure everybody realizes that the group is a safe place. I've seen a couple people post because they felt like there was no other place that they could post with the, whatever situation they had going on. And I'm glad that people feel that way. I just want to make sure that everybody realizes that it is a safe place. Obviously, you can contact myself or Tracy, or you can, you know, if you need a professional service, there are professional services out there, obviously. Places like BetterHelp, who've been sponsors on the show in the past. And Tracy, what else could they do?
You can call 988, the crisis hotline. You can also text at 741-741. We love you guys, and just reach out to us, please.
All right, Tracy, let's get into the meat of this.
Meat. It's what for dinner.
Sorry.
So here's the basics of it. I don't want to dwell on it, but I personally felt like the main show on Sundays, the true Hillbilly Horror Stories show, had become maybe a little bit stale. I will take full blame and responsibility for that happening. And the major problem is that it's went on for way too long. With that being said, because I kind of felt, unfortunately, like a lot of you were feeling, it's just nobody had really said anything. I felt like that the show wasn't what it was in the past. I felt like the effort wasn't as strong as what it's been in the past on my part as far as researching, telling the story, and really getting a story out there, the deep dives that we became known for. I put up a poll and said, you know, hey, what do you guys think? And then lo and behold, a lot of people had the exact same thoughts that I did. I don't know why it took me so long to catch on. I know what the issue was, and we've listened. You know, the bottom line is I think when we started this thing, it was me working. Hillbilly Horror Stories was a side project. And eventually that became a full-time gig. And I think that sucked some of the fun out of it, you know, on my end. Because I started spending, instead of, you know, 30 hours a week on a story, I was now spending 60 hours a week on several different stories and different aspects. We were putting out 6 episodes a week. Now, not all those were brand new episodes. Some of them were, you know, like a best of or classic episode, you want to call it. But the reality of it is, I think I put too much emphasis on trying to put out multiple episodes instead of focusing on what got us to where we were.
Yeah.
And initially in my thought process, I kind of figured that maybe since we were putting out multiple episodes, it was okay to cut back a little bit on the main episode. And in reality, that was the exact wrong way to think. So what we've done is we've listened to you guys. I think that we've had too many episodes out. It's just kind of cluttering the space. And I think people are picking and choosing what they listen to. And in the end, it's just ruined the whole experience for most of our listeners.
We're sorry.
So what we've decided to do is we're going to focus on getting the original episodes on Sundays back to what they were in the beginning, in the first, you know, 4 or 5 years. It's going to be the deeper dives. It's going to be the longer stories. It's just going to be us enjoying what we did, because I think a lot of people could sense that it just wasn't as fun. We heard things from the episodes that seemed kind of rushed, they weren't as in-depth as what they were before. And some of the details were kind of glossed over, where in the past they weren't glossed over, and it didn't seem like we were enjoying doing the show as much. And
bottom line is,
all that was fair.
We ain't going to do that no more.
Yeah, we're not going to.
Because we don't want to disappoint you guys. That was the last thing we want to do. So now that we're somewhat settled in our happy place now, you guys, just thank you so much for hanging with us and not giving up on us. And we are going to do our best to give you the best stories we can, because we love you all. And we don't want to lose any listeners, for sure. So just hang in there with us a little bit longer, okay?
Going forward, we have eliminated some episodes to make time to do the Sunday episodes properly. So there will be no more Patreon previews on Tuesdays, no more Hillbilly Dead Time stories on Wednesday. Though I do want to say, eventually here in the next month or so, that will continue to be a YouTube episode with a video. So if you guys like Hillbilly Dead Time Stories, it won't be going away. It just won't be on this platform. It'll be on the video platform. We're also doing away with Eerie Encounters. So what we're going to have is on Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays, you'll get an episode. So it'll be 3 instead of 6. The Friday will always be a classic. The Saturday episode is the Macabre Misfortunes. We're going to continue to do that. And then Sundays will be a deeper dive. We're also going to cut back on some of the interviews. Not saying that we're not going to do interviews anymore, but there won't be near as many. Not every show will have an interview. I do want to say, some people, I think they had the wrong impression. They felt like because there was an interview on the show, that made the episode shorter. It didn't. If we had a guest on, we just had a guest on. That guest had nothing to do with the length of the story that was done on the episode that they were on. A lot of times those things are recorded 3-4 weeks in advance, and we didn't even know what episode they were going to be on. So it really had no bearing on it. But I understand how some people might have thought that was a way of stretching the episode, but it really wasn't. So we just haven't been doing as long episodes. So now we're back to the crazy 20-hour a week research and stuff. And I've actually decided to not keep Hillbilly Horror Stories as a full-time job and to get back into the insurance business and start working full-time again and put this where it needs to be, as a labor of love and not a labor of money.
There you go.
So that's where we're at. Are you guys ready to hear the first episode of the Is What It Was Hillbilly Horror Stories?
Yay!
Yeah!
Yay! That was like 3 different audience members.
All right. So, Tracy, to kick things off, we're going to do a deep dive into the Allen House in Monticello, Arkansas.
All right, sounds good.
The Allen House in Monticello is located in the historical residential section. That's where all the rich people live.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
It's not far from the historical downtown area.
When you want to live where the rich people live and haunt where the rich people live?
Yeah, if I was going to haunt someplace.
Enjoy the finer things.
You don't want to haunt some place that doesn't have air conditioning in the South.
No. Mm-mm.
The Allen House was built in 1906 for Joe Allen. Now, hold on. I just realized something. Joe's middle name was Lee, by the way. Joe Lee Allen.
Hey, that's our middle name.
It is. It's just spelled different. Not his. His is spelled like mine.
Oh, gotcha.
But yours is spelled different than mine. Joe did pretty well for himself. So let's discuss the house first. And then we're going to get into Joe Allen and his family in a bit. The house was built by Josiah Barclay White. He was a top-of-the-line architect at the time.
Cool.
It's a Gothic Queen Anne Victorian house built with Joe Allen's personal lumber.
Ooh, even cooler.
So this lumber, check this out. 400-year-old oak and pine trees.
Oh, wow. So it smells good, too.
I'm sure. Allen wanted this to be the nicest house on the street and in the town, and what do you know, it was.
Good for him.
2.5 stories, 9,500 square feet, with a 2,000 square foot attic.
Oh, shoot. They put a lot of stuff up there.
I don't think they included that. 9,500 doesn't include the 2,000 in the attic.
So
I think that's extra.
Separate. Oh, wow. Yeah.
This place is absolutely gorgeous inside and out. It's got these massive Grecian columns up on the front. And on one end of the house, there's a 3-story octagon turret. Then on the other end, there's a 4-story octagon turret. At the front of the house, check this out. It's framed by these large stained glass windows. Those windows were actually made by glass blowers in New Orleans.
Beautiful.
Artisans in St. Louis made all the curved window frames that those stained glass are in.
Wow.
Because, you know, the octagon rooms have.
Well, it sounds beautiful.
There's a tin ceiling above the dining room table area. It was hand-beaten into a beautiful work of art. It's got these little... It's like almost like water, blue water, and it's got these little cherub faces in it, like on four or five of them, cherub faces.
I wonder how long it takes them to do that.
I don't know, but it's very pretty.
I bet.
I'll have to try to post some pictures of some of this stuff. In all, the house, according to at least Zillow, has many of the original features right now. It's got 4 bathrooms, 5 bedrooms, original chandeliers, beveled glass doors, crystal doorknobs, hardwood floors, and original woodwork and staircases.
What about the stained windows?
They're also there.
They're all still there?
I don't know if the stained windows are original or not, but they're there.
Good.
The main kitchen is on the first floor. This kitchen was used for serving guests and visitors, and then obviously the people who were residing there.
Mm-hmm.
There's a second kitchen that's up on the second floor. That was added when the home was turned into apartments. And we'll actually talk about that phase a little bit more.
Okay.
When we get a little bit to that point later. There's enough parking space there for 5 vehicles and a wraparound covered porch.
Man.
All the way around.
Gosh, that sounds wonderful.
All right, so that's the basics of the actual house. But as we've learned, sometimes the land that the home sits on can also lead to paranormal activity.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk a little bit about the property.
Who's making all that noise up there?
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about the property prior to the Allen House being there. Before the house was built, a girls' school called the Rogers Female Academy was built in 1857. When the Civil War began, the school became a hospital for injured Confederate soldiers. Now, we know that always leaves a bad mark.
Yeah.
Because a lot of those people probably died on the property. After the Civil War, the school actually reopened, but this time it was a school for boys. It was called the Thompson School for Boys. It would later end up becoming co-ed. I'm not exactly sure when the school closed down. But like I said, they started building the home, the Allen House, in 1906. So I'm not sure what was there right prior or if it was just empty land or what. Now, I said we'd learn a little bit about Joe Allen and his family. Joe initially made his fortune being a planter. So basically a farmer.
Yeah. Farmers rock, by the way.
He did a great job investing his money in the lumber industry, as we mentioned, that he built his house with his own personal lumber, and that's how he did it, because he owned lumber mills.
That's lucky.
The lumber industry was very lucrative, so he started to invest the money he was making off that and planting into local businesses, such as buying a theater in town. He also owned a livery stable, a private school, a hotel, which he called the Allen Hotel, go figure. And my favorite is that he owned a hearse that he would rent out for funerals.
Oh, shoot, he thought of everything, didn't he?
He did. Now.
So basically he owned the town.
He literally did. Yeah. It turns out he was quite the salesman as well. He sold cars, horses, mules, buggies, and wagons.
There you go.
Because this was at a time where you had cars were coming in, but they weren't everywhere yet.
Yeah.
He would eventually become president of the Commercial Loan and Trust Company in 1908, like he didn't have enough going on.
No kidding. How does he manage all that, I guess?
Yeah, I think it's safe to say that financially, Joe Allen did okay for himself. In all, that wasn't enough. And he ended up going into politics and became the county treasurer.
Was he married?
Yes.
Oh, man.
Yes.
How did that marriage work? Oh, I guess it would have worked maybe if he was not home at all.
Well, we're getting ready to tell you.
Oh.
Joe had the house built for his growing family. Now, this family consisted of his wife, Katie. Now, I'm assuming this is Katie. I've looked up, I don't know how many videos, hoping somebody would give the proper pronunciation. Her name was spelled C-A-D-D-Y-E. But I'm thinking that's Katie.
Well, I mean, that could work.
Spelled different, but I don't know.
That is different.
So it could have been Kadai. Kadai, mate.
Kadai, mate.
Their family was very happy. Unfortunately, they lost a 9-month-old son.
Oh.
But they did have 3 daughters. Lonnie, who was born in 1891. Liddell, born in 1894. And Louie, born in 1897. They got 3 daughters, and 2 of them are named Lonnie and Louie.
Mm-hmm. At least they spaced them out a little bit, too. So it wouldn't get too crazy around there.
The 3 girls would grow up in this house in the lap of luxury, as you can imagine. They wanted nothing. Every haunting, as we've learned, seems to have a tragic story behind it. And there are definitely a few for the Allen House. So let's start with Joe Allen. He had a hereditary heart issue. Now, this probably led to the death of his 9-month-old son.
Yeah.
His youngest daughter, Louise, death in the 1940s was also due
to this heart condition.
And another death that we'll talk about in a little bit, but I don't want to spoil it.
Okay.
Joe died of a heart attack at 54 years old.
Yeah, way too young.
Now, this was a death that Liddell, who was actually 23 at the time, never really got over. She was the quintessential daddy's girl. Katie, though, on the other hand, she carried on after Joe's death, and she actually turned out to be quite the businesswoman. Now, Lonnie and her husband, Carl, moved back in to kind of help out a little bit. How good of a business person was the mom, Katie? Well, she charged them $10 for a room a month.
$10?
Well, this was in the...
No, but I'm saying that's probably a lot back then, right?
But I'm saying she charged the daughter that came to help out. She charged her for one room.
Oh, sorry. I totally missed that. She charged her.
Charged her dollar, $10 a month for one room in the house.
Okay.
So, yeah, she was quite the business person. She was savvy. Her husband ran the theater in town for them. So I don't know what he was getting paid, but he obviously did, you know, okay. Let's focus on Liddell for a minute. Now, Liddell is thought to be the main spirit to haunt the home. Paranormal investigators think that there might be as many as 6 spirits in the Allen house. Now, back when Liddell was 19 years old, she went out on a date with a gentleman by the name of Prentice Savage. Now, first off, that's a badass name.
Yes, it is.
That's like a name you would hear in a video game or something.
Yeah, it's very cool.
He came from a really good family. Liddell, though, was very interested in him, and he was interested in her, too, until there was a situation one night.
Is he a bad boy?
No, not really. But he tried to kiss her on the front porch, and Katie Allen made it very clear that their daughter's virtues were not going to be taken like that, and his moves like that would not be tolerated. He moved to Texas a year later.
I'll just move on.
But we haven't heard the last of Mr. Prentice Savage. So Liddell would eventually marry a local by the name of Boyd Bonner. This was in 1914. He ran the town pool hall. So you can imagine they weren't real thrilled about that either.
Oh, I'm sure not. People shouldn't be so judgy.
Well, the two got married. They moved to Texas.
And they ran into...
Where Boyd worked on an oil rig. I wonder if they did run into Prentice out there.
Well, how funny would that be?
Well, Texas is a pretty big state.
Well, yeah.
Boyd and Liddell had a son in 1915. They named him Allen Bonner. Obviously, the Allen came from her
dad.
Yeah, well, her last name, too.
Well, yeah.
But her maiden name. When Allen was a teenager, he moved back to Arkansas to live with his grandma, Katie. Liddell and Boyd would get a divorce after 13 years, primarily because of Boyd's excessive drinking. They did somehow remain friends.
I mean, that's good, I guess.
Yeah. Now, Allen, though, he thrived back in Arkansas. He loved the attic area. He found that he actually had a talent for writing, and when he was in the attic, he actually considered that his creative space. Mm-hmm. It's like his creative juices just flowed when he was up there. He went to college. He majored in journalism. And after graduating, he went to New York and got a great paying job editing for the radio division of the AP in the early 40s.
Have fun.
Yep. Allen desperately wanted to go into the military because World War II had broken out, and he wanted to go and represent his country. But unfortunately, he had a heart problem.
Oh, you're kidding.
No. So we kind of mentioned that there was another person that had a heart problem.
Yep. Sounds like my dad's side of the family.
Right. Now, as far as Liddell, after her divorce, she moved to Memphis for a bit. And she had a bunch of failed relationships and decided, you know what, I'm going to go back home and live with mom. So that's what she did. She moved back to Monticello, Arkansas, and lived with her mother. The relationship that broke the camel's back was Prentice Savage.
Oh, I knew he'd sneak back in there somewhere.
She had actually reconnected with him when she was in Memphis. You see, Prentice at the time was married to another woman. And of course, he told Liddell that, you know, he hated his wife. She was a pain in the neck and he just desperately wanted to be divorced. And Prentice at this point in life was very successful. He had a lot of money and a lot of free time to play around. He is the one that seeked out Liddell.
Oh, he did?
Yeah. And he said, you know, I would like you to be my side piece. He probably put it a little different back then.
Yeah.
But he made it clear that she was going to be the side piece. And she was like, you know what? Mom's not around to stop at this time. Mm-hmm. And I haven't had the best of luck with men, so fine. So she starts seeing Prentice. Liddell had really just been deserted by her last lover, and she was pretty vulnerable, so I guess you can understand maybe where she was coming from.
Yeah.
Prentice's wife, though, she had a whole different thought process of what was going to happen.
You think so?
Yeah, because she pretty much told Prentice, you know what? If you want to go, that's fine. We'll divorce, but I'm taking half your stuff.
Yep, that's the way it goes.
Turns out that Prentice didn't really want to give up half of his stuff.
Well, I'm sure not.
So when given the choice of give up half your stuff and leave or stay with me, he chose to stay with his wife and abandon Liddell.
Damn, she is unlucky.
On Christmas Eve, 1949, Liddell poisoned herself with mercury cyanide in her bedroom at the Allen House.
What'd she go do that for? Because she was rejected?
This story is going to unfold way more as we get through.
Okay.
So you have to be patient on this one. Katie, not able to look at her room anymore, had it completely sealed off. And it stayed sealed off for nearly 40 years.
Dag.
Katie died in 1954. So this was like 5 years later. The mansion was divided up and made into apartments. Remember I told you we'd get to the apartments part. It was actually managed by members of the Allen family for a little while, but eventually the mansion was sold to a person outside of the family, and that was in the 1960s. It became housing for college students at the University of Arkansas at Monticello. And in the mid-1980s, it was sold again. Now, this was to a couple who made it back into a family home. But they opened up a gift shop up on the first floor. And they were the ones who eventually opened up the sealed bedroom of Liddell. It's said that when they opened it up, there was a bottle of mercury cyanide poisoning still in the room.
Oh my gosh. Wow. I guess it was left exactly how she left it.
Right.
Wow.
So eventually the mansion was sold to a woman from Texas. She loved the house, but she didn't really love the ghost. So she would like have people come in to bless the house. She hung crucifixes everywhere. Yeah. She would constantly say prayers just to kind of get rid of them. But eventually, in 2007, the current owners, Mark and Rebecca Spencer, they bought the home. So they just moved in, right? You buy a home, you just move in.
Right.
No.
Oh.
Turns out the house set an escrow for 2 years before they could move in because after the Spencers bought the home, the lady from Texas didn't want to leave. No.
That's not how that works, is it?
No, it's not how that works. She decided that, you know what, I really like the house and I don't think that I want to go. But long story short, they were eventually able to move in 2009, 2 years later. Mark had moved to town because he had taken a job as a professor at the University of Arkansas. Oh, by the way, when they moved to town, but since they couldn't buy the house, or since they couldn't move into the house, they had to buy a temporary house for the 2 years that they were waiting.
I mean, I can't imagine how frustrating that was. I mean, wouldn't you be frustrated?
Yeah, I would be extremely frustrated. So Mark's in town. He sees the professor at the college. The Allen House had long been known as the haunted house of the area. But Mark, of course, didn't believe in ghosts. Obviously, he had enough experiences to change that mindset. In fact, Mark has written 2 books about the Allen House.
Nice. He got a lot of info.
Right.
Pretty quick.
A lot of first-hand knowledge.
Right.
So Mark and Rebecca also realized that the townspeople all really wanted to see the house. So they started offering tours to kind of help raise the funds to help with the renovations, because that's not cheap.
Oh, I'm sure it's not.
Especially in a house like this.
Oh, yeah. That was a really good idea they had to raise that money.
Yeah, I mean, and a lot of places do that. I know we've been to houses. I know the Hinsdale house.
Mm-hmm.
That's what he uses the money for, to help to put on new roofs and stuff like that. The Culbertson Mansion in Indiana, they do a haunted house every year to raise money.
Yeah.
Waverly does that. So, yeah, it's a good idea. If you got a desire and people out there are willing to do it, why not?
Sure.
All right, so when it became apparent that Liddell was the resident ghost, they started to offer special events like have dinner with a ghost during the Halloween season. They had students actually come and give out the tours during Halloween. Paranormal investigators caught some hard evidence and informed them of the spirits of the house, none of which was a threat. They were told that the spirits were Liddell, of course, and some other family members, and an unknown little boy.
So, oh, was it the one that, wonder if it was the one that passed away?
You know, that's a good question, but no, because this little boy, as we're going to find out, was like 5 or 6.
Oh.
So let's really get into the paranormal aspects of it now. Basically, ever since the Allen House was sold in the 1950s, ghosts have been seen and talked about. Now, obviously, we're going to start with Liddell. Why is she still there? She obviously had a lot of heartbreak in her life, as well as taking her own life. She experienced the death of her baby sister, Louie. She also lost her dad, and she also lost her son.
Hmm.
The child that graduated journalism and went to New York. He died in his mid-20s in New York from complications of pneumonia, possibly because of his heart.
Oh, man. Daggone stuff will catch up to you some way or another.
Yeah. I will say this. I'm confused about the date of Liddell's death, and here's why. I've looked at, I don't know how many stories on this and videos, articles. And I read several accounts that said she took the poison on Christmas Eve after she ate a plate of cookies in 1949. She then passed away on Christmas Day. It said it was the next day before she passed.
That's kind of like, didn't she know those cookies were for Santa?
Well, apparently not. And she's greedy. Maybe that's what irritated her. Maybe it had nothing to do with the lover. Maybe it's just...
Yeah.
She was like, I can't believe I ate Santa's cookies.
Oh, that would do it.
Okay. Here's the problem, though. I saw a picture of her headstone, and it says January 2nd, 1949. So I don't know how she could have died Christmas Eve or Christmas Day in 1949 when her headstone says literally it was a year before, January 2nd of the same year.
Oh.
So she would have been dead basically almost 12 months, according to that, before Christmas of 1949.
Bizarre.
Yeah. So I'm not sure. Every story tells me it happened Christmas Eve and Christmas Day. But the headstone picture says January 2nd of 1949.
Mm.
So I thought I would throw it out there. Aside from Liddell, her son Alan is said to be there, as well as her father Joe, her mother Katie, and the boy who's approximately 5 years old. It's thought that maybe the boy might have went to school there at the Thompson School for Boys.
Yeah, probably so.
Beforehand. There was a boy's headstone that was found hanging inside of a wall of the old dilapidated carriage house. Like, literally, like,
why
the wall had to be torn down. It was inside the wall.
Would they do that?
Well, there's a couple of thoughts on that. Now, according to the headstone, the child died in 1900. It's thought that the servants who had actually came and worked for the Allen family in 1907 might have brought the headstone with them. Maybe that was a relative of theirs. Maybe that was their son. And they didn't want to leave the headstone back where they came. And they put it in the wall just to kind of hide it.
Oh.
So.
Oh, that's different.
They would know. So that's the main thought on it. But not exactly sure if that's the case or not. Now, Liddell started making her appearances known soon after she passed away. It's thought that her mother might have even seen her in her room, which is why she sealed it up. She likes to show herself looking out the turret window. Neighbors and visitors have seen her on multiple occasions ever since the 50s. Author Carol Wilson, she actually lived in one of the apartments in 1959 when they had divided it up. She had several experiences with Liddell's spirit, enough that she based the book Scent of Lilac on the incidents that she personally had with Liddell's spirit. A doctor that was once living in the apartments, he took a picture of Liddell as she was showing up as a reflection in the mirror.
Oh, that's awesome.
That is awesome. In 1968, a newlywed couple found out the hard way that Liddell was real. See, the husband took a picture of his bride in the dining room. And when the picture was developed, there was a ghostly woman caught on film, standing right next to the bride.
Well, I thought she was going to say she was in the bed with her hootie booty in.
What the hell? In the dining room?
Hey, they're newlyweds. Do it on the table.
This is my favorite. A couple saw an apparition go into a closet. They tried to shut the closet door to, like, keep it in. but they couldn't shut the door. I mean, it was like something was pushing back. And at the whole time, Liddell was giggling at them.
Good. She should have been laughing. That's dumb.
For years, renters and owners would hear someone walking around the attic space. Now, this could be Liddell or her son, Allen, or both, because they both loved the attic. And we've talked about Allen's love up there for writing and stuff, but this was also a place where Liddell actually had some hidden secrets, and we're going to find out about that in a bit. Oh, by the way, police have been called several times by people living there because they thought that there were potential robbers or burglars breaking or something in the attic.
Ooh.
Only to find nobody there.
Yeah, I wouldn't like that too much.
A couple in the
midnight. I'd rather have a ghost.
How many times are you going to talk over me this episode?
So I'd rather have a ghost than a rat. I just thought I'd point that out.
I know you would. A couple in the mid-1980s bought the place and they set up a gift shop. I told you about that earlier. Apparently, Liddell wasn't real big on the gift shop idea, and she showed herself to the couple's housekeeper by going up and down the stairway as a misty figure.
Oh, wonder why she didn't like it.
I don't know.
Wouldn't there be some pretty things to look at in there?
I don't know. Maybe she felt like they were taking advantage of the situation.
Well, no, you're right.
I don't even know what they were selling in a gift shop. Might not even had anything to do with Allen.
Oh, okay.
Others have heard Liddell crying at nighttime. This seems to be actually a really common occurrence. So we're going to get back to Liddell in a bit because we have a huge story that involves the attic that I haven't covered yet. So let's first talk about some of the other spirits in the house. When the Spencers moved in, occurrences started almost immediately, including the huge story that we're going to get to in a bit. But they also encountered the other spirits. For example, Liddell's son, Allen. Now, he's supposed to be a fun-loving spirit who likes to whisper people's names in their ears. This is residents and visitors.
That's hot.
People have seen him walking around the first floor wearing a cowboy hat.
Oh, there you go.
He still loves the attic. He and his mother are said to walk around up there together. He also likes to move objects around. You know, I always get, they talk about in a situation like this where you got multiple spirits, how do they know he's the one moving stuff around?
I guess because he's a guy and they figured it, you know, why make a lady do it?
Another spirit Joe Allen himself, he apparently likes to come and visit his daughter and grandson and his wife. He loved the mansion so much that he built, but didn't get to spend, you know, tons of time in it because he did die fairly early.
Yeah, he did.
And he likes to come back. And the funny thing is, though, when he talks to paranormal investigators, mm-hmm. he actually identifies himself as Allen. Because mm-hmm. Allen, you know, was his last name.
Yeah.
Rather than, but Allen's also the first name of mm-hmm. his grandson.
Well, that's true.
So it can be confusing. Apparently, though, when Joe leaves, he floats by his car that is still on the property, and then he tries to get Liddell to join him. But she never leaves.
That is cool. His car is still there?
Yes.
Aw.
Now, Liddell's mother, Katie, has made her fair share of appearances as well, and she's come through on some EVPs. She's expressed her negative feelings about Liddell's husband, Boyd. Even in the afterddeath, she won't let it go.
Yep.
I said the afterdeath. I meant the afterlife. It's still after death. So, on one occasion, she told paranormal investigators that Boyd was drunk every Christmas.
Well,
I'm sure he was.
Well, it's okay. It's Christmas.
It's not okay. We mentioned the little boy ghost. He appeared one time to Miss Spencer. She described him as somber.
Somber?
Now, we're going to get more into that in a little bit, because I've got more on that story. Upon further research, I did find one article, just one, that said that there were three little girls. But this article alluded that this might actually be the three Allen sisters coming mm-hmm. back as younger versions of themselves.
Well, yeah, I could see that, because it was probably their happiest times, I reckon.
They like to play in the foyer at the bottom of the steps. They've also been seen by the Spencers and the former owners. So the little girls have been seen by everybody.
That's awesome.
Besides having many reports of paranormal experiences for the people who've stayed at the Allen House or even owned the home, there have been boatloads of hard evidence caught by cameras and EVPs to back up some of these experiences. This is how we know some of the entities that were not really formally known to have resided there, like the little boy, for example. Mm-hmm. Liddell's parents would show the paranormal investigators some southern manners and always talk to the paranormal investigators.
Oh, dang. That's really nice.
It's apparent that they saw them as guests in their homes. Mm-hmm. The Spencers have actually done a few investigations themselves, which is actually on YouTube, if you want to go check them out. He seems like, I haven't seen a whole lot of her, but he seems like a really nice guy. The Ghost Brothers have done a few investigations at the home, and they were not disappointed, from my understanding.
Really?
Yes. All right, I said we had one big story to still share, and we're going to do that after a quick break from our sponsor.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai. Kosai.org.
Wayfair's biggest sale of the season is here. Right now, score up to 80% off everything home, plus fast and free shipping site-wide. Shop now through July 28th at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
All right, Tracy. So we often hear these stories like, well, let's take Liddell's, for example. She had a secret affair that ended bad and it led to her suicide. But how do we actually know that that story's true? You know, a lot of times these answers come from mediums or paranormal investigators. And don't get me wrong, I'm not trying to put down what these people are saying. But, you know, it's not exactly like you found it in a newspaper article. You can't necessarily say that that's fact because mm-hmm. a medium or paranormal investigator yeah. says that's what a spirit told them. But in this case, however, We have something a little more concrete. When owner Mark Spencer was doing some work in the attic, he discovered a batch of letters hidden under some floorboards.
Oh my gosh.
These were love letters.
Oh, yes.
The first batch that he discovered was from October of 1948. Aha, we're getting somewhere. I just noticed something that I didn't catch earlier. Mark opened up one of the white envelopes and pulled the letter out. It started out, "Dearest Liddell," and then it was signed, "Love, P." The letter P. Mark realized that he was looking at love letters written to Liddell 2 months before her suicide. All right, so we're finding out something together here.
Mm-hmm.
Remember I said, they said Christmas Eve, 1949.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, it says January 2nd, 1949.
Right.
How could that be? He just said that letter was October of 1948, and that was 2 months before her death.
Mm-hmm.
So that would have made in 1948, which meant that January 2nd might have been the day she was buried.
Oh, I bet it was.
And that would have made sense in 1949. Yeah. But everything I saw said 1949.
Mm-hmm.
But he says right there, this letter said 1948, and that was 2 months before. So we still don't know anymore, but at least we're figuring stuff out together. In this attic, Mark Spencer had his first encounter with Liddell. So he's up there, right? And he's reading these letters. There's several of them. They're all actually on display in the Allen House.
Oh, really?
Yeah, there's like a big glass case with all of them on the wall, with all of them up there.
Yeah, I hope they didn't talk dirty or anything in it.
I seriously doubt it. Anyway, so he's reading this letter. He looks up at the ceiling. And Mark said, "Liddell, you know what? I am so sorry." Shortly after that, he looks up and he saw a woman dressed in what he thought was 1920s attire, walking straight towards him. He said he wiped the sweat out of his eyes and he blinked a few times. And when he looked again, the woman was farther back in the attic. And then she disappeared as she heard his wife coming up the steps. I mean, she did have experience with other women.
That's so very true.
She probably knew how to make herself scarce if she needed to.
Mm-hmm.
Another encounter happened in the bedroom where Liddell consumed the cyanide. Mark at first thought it was his wife, Rebecca. He was kind of walking on the outside of the hallway, and he glanced into the room, and he saw a woman looking out the window. But oddly, she didn't have the drapes pulled back. So he thinks, well, that's odd. Unless she's got x-ray vision, how is she looking out the window? But she was standing there, so Mark steps into the room. He looks at her for several seconds as he walks towards her. He gets about within 3 feet, and he starts to ask what she's doing, still thinking it's his wife. And as he starts to speak, the woman vanished.
He's like, "Dang, woman, that was rude." Man, to be that close, that's pretty awesome.
So, Tracy, we talked earlier about Rebecca meeting the ghost boy. And I said I had more on that. First of all, there is a postcard from 1908. Remember, the house just built
yeah.
in 1907, mm-hmm. basically, is when they moved in. There is, if you look at it on the front, I'll try to find this picture. But they've got these massive columns on the front of the house. Right beside one of the columns on the steps appears to be the picture of a ghost boy. Now, whether it's the same one or not, I don't know. But, like I said, there was a school there at one point, so maybe that had something to do with it.
That's interesting.
So, Rebecca says that she saw this little boy, and at the time that it happened, she literally could not look away. She feels that her eyes were looking on this little boy for at least 10 seconds, but it seemed like 10 minutes. She said, now, seeing him wasn't scary. What was scary is that she couldn't control her reaction to it. She said she couldn't breathe. It was like all of her internal organs had just wrenched up and she was paralyzed, basically. She said all she could do was stand there and look at him. When she was able to finally blink and look away, he was gone. And then she was completely fine. But this wasn't Rebecca's only incident in the Allen house. They had an event. They were, because they would do like weddings and bar mitzvahs and stuff like that there. And this was the day before a wedding or a bridal shower. She couldn't remember exactly what it was. But she went up to the room where it was going to be held at the day before to kind of spruce it up a little bit. So she's vacuuming and she goes by a Victrola that's been up there. It's original. Her eye kind of caught some movement as she was walking by, and she kind of noticed and stopped and paid a little more attention, and the record was spinning on the Victrola, but it was barely spinning, okay? She kept vacuuming, but she kept thinking, man, that's weird. Why is it moving? So it wasn't going at full speed, just enough to catch her attention, like we said. She gets intrigued enough to where she stopped the vacuum and she walked over to it. As she walks over and starts staring at the Victrola, the record starts spinning faster and faster the longer she looked at it. Eventually, it was spinning fast enough to actually play. So, she puts the needle down on top of it, and as soon as the needle touched it, the record stopped instantly. Literally. It was a sudden stop.
She didn't even get to hear what the song was? No. Well.
So, apparently, Liddell's mom used to love to play the Victrola when she had guests in the house. So, Tracy, that is the story of the Allen house.
That's pretty interesting. A lot of good things, a lot of sad things.
Yeah.
But I'm glad they're still hanging around. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it sounds pretty cool. I didn't see much about the other sister, Louie, that passed away. Mm-hmm. And I didn't see anything about when the other sister, Lonnie, passed away either.
Hmm.
But Louie passed away before that, but she apparently doesn't haunt the house. Unless she's one of the three little girls.
Mm.
In that case, they're all there.
Well, she must have just been boring. You know what I'm saying? She didn't stand out, so.
Probably not.
No. So. That's so funny how they switch something to so many different things, building-wise.
Right.
You know, but then it seems always to end up being back to where it was originally.
Yeah, the people. It's like, I can't imagine turning something like that into apartments.
Oh, no way. No.
Because this house is absolutely gorgeous.
Oh, I bet. Yeah.
All right, Tracy. So we are going to take another really quick break. And then we will be back to talk about Patreon and stuff. What are you doing?
Pulling my hair out. Your hair. Yeah. Sorry.
Jesus. All right. Break time.
It was my pit hair, so you better be glad it's on my head this time.
Please stop. Pit stop. Pit stop.
Okay, I'm done.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.
Big news! Wayfair's biggest sale of the season is here. It's Black Friday in July. Right now, score up to 80% off everything home at Wayfair. Get our lowest prices of the summer for 5 days only. Plus, amazing doorbuster deals and 24-hour surprise flash deals with fast and free shipping site-wide. So don't wait. Head to Wayfair.com today to score up to 80% off now through July 28th.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Don't you love my hair?
Hi, Tracy. So, of course, we've got the cruise still coming up September.
Mm-hmm.
You still have time if you can actually get a hold of Robin Troop or his daughter. Call out there and see if you can set something up. He can be hard to get a hold of sometimes.
Yeah, definitely
keep trying. That is in September. You got plenty of time still up to July to make payments, so you can make this happen.
Yeah.
All right. With that being said, I am working on, don't have a set date, don't have a set location, but I'm trying to set up a St. Augustine show with History Goes Bump in May. But I'm trying to do it at the same place where we did the last one, if you had to go. And if not, I'll find some other place. But I'm trying to give them first shot at it. So as soon as I have that, hopefully in the next couple of weeks, I'll have that lined up. And then Diane and Kelly do not do live shows anymore, so they're actually doing that as a favor for us.
Oh.
And it'll be fun.
Very, very cool.
Tracy, what do you got going on over there?
Well, other than my hair, let's see. Our iTunes, we had Rooney711, Tim Mullins, Mojo Lobster, Edgar.
Alan Poe?
No. Orlana? Rolana? Edgar, I'm sorry, baby. And Maddie710. And then Patreons this week, we had Mallory, Bradley, Karen, and Mark. Thank you guys so much. We appreciate everything you do, especially those reviews. Please keep them coming. Then just thank you all for your support and hanging in there with us. We appreciate it.
All right, let me try Edgar's name. Oh. I think it's Edgar Arellana, I believe.
Oh. That is.
Two L's is pronounced like a Y.
Oh.
In Spanish.
My bad.
So.
My bad, anyways. Edgar.
It was fun to let her try anyway, though.
I know. You knew I wasn't going to get that. And it's a pretty name, actually. It's really pretty.
All right, guys. We love you. We hope you enjoyed the episode. And let me ask a favor of you guys. Not everybody, because I know everybody's not going to. If you enjoy the episodes, even if you don't leave a review, drop us a line or send us a message and like say, hey, I enjoyed the episode.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'll be honest with you, sometimes, and I'm not blaming anybody, but we've sometimes will go months without anybody even acknowledging an episode,
mm-hmm.
any way, shape, or form. So we don't know if it's good, if it's bad. And human nature, if you don't hear any kind of comments on something, sometimes you lose focus a little bit.
Yeah.
And in the beginning, the first 2-3 years of Hillbilly Horror Stories, we got constant feedback and it just kind of stopped. And I don't know why, but it helps. We're human, and we put a lot of work. There's nothing worse than putting in 30 to 40 hours into an episode and hearing nothing about it. You're almost like, did anybody hear it? I mean, we know people hear it because we see the numbers on it. But I'm just saying, if you like it on occasion, throw us a bone. So we love you guys, and we'll talk to you next week.
Have a blessed week.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org. One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org. One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.